Hello, and thank you for tuning in to the uncensored version of the Veritas 7 podcast, the true crime podcast that's dedicated to examining the intricate and graphic details of the most unimaginable cases through the lens of our amazing panel of experienced investigators. Led by host, Kurt Dillon. This extraordinary team of super sleuths acquires all of its facts through Freedom of Information Act requests to the actual investigating agencies supervising the cases. Together with occasional guests and experts, the team delves deep into some of the most unorthodox, bizarre, and so far, unsolvable cases from all over the world. What's more, by tuning into this particular podcast, you actually have the opportunity to assist the team as they endeavor to unlock the secrets that have so far eluded some of the world's finest investigators. This is the Veritas 7 Uncensored Podcast. And without further delay, here's your host, Kurt Dillon.
I believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
TummyTime Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free.
That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while.
Nonsense. In fact, Tummy Time offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it.
I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
Tonight, again, we're going over the alphabet murders. And I'm going to set it off on something that's disturbed me about this case. And about, it's not that it disturbs me about the case or about the victims. It disturbs me about the suspect. And it disturbs me because nobody mentioned it and nobody noticed it. Or at least nobody had the balls to vocalize it. And I believe my own psychological experience in forensic psychology, I believe that it adds a tremendous amount of weight to the psychopathology of this criminal. And that is, all right, it's been suggested that this guy, that it was just, a lot of these were crimes of opportunity where you have a sexual psychopath and he's walking down the street and he's targeting these young girls and he's abducting them and he's doing these horrible things to them. And then he's leaving their bodies, redressing them after he sexually assaults them and all this other kind of stuff. And I get that. And I understand because each one of these girls was abducted basically in a public area off a public street. I can see how at first glance, that would definitely be an impression that anybody would have. However, if you look at the case history of similar abductions, rapes, murders, if I'm a sexual psychopath and I prey on 10 and 11 year old girls and I'm walking down the street and I'm looking for victims, I'm sorry to say, these are not the girls I would choose. Usually in those scenarios, the girls are like JonBenet Ramsey kind of cute. And I'm not saying these girls are ugly, so don't get me wrong. I'm not speaking ill of the dead. But these are not the kind of girls that somebody, each one of them had their own kind of emotional problems. They were victims before this guy ever even came along, is the point that I'm trying to make. And it takes a special kind of psychopathy to target that type of victim. So I just wanted to put that out there. I wanted to see what the rest of the people on the panel have to say about that. Agree with me. Don't disagree with me. Think I'm a monster for saying that because these girls weren't adorable and didn't look like they were going to grow up to be supermodels that, that they shouldn't have been targeted, or they were targeted just for that purpose. So, Matt, go ahead. You set it off. What do you think?
I absolutely agree with your assessment of the girls that this happened to, but at the same time, you know more about psychology than I do. Maybe whoever did this was in such a place that they felt like that's all that they could go after, right? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's very possible. There is a whole pathology around men, grown adult men, not killers, but they have very low self-confidence. They have very low self-esteem. And they will go out and they will only seek to start relationships with women that are in a really, really, really bad place.
And exactly. That's kind of what I was feeling about this.
And unfortunately, the colloquial term for that, as negative sounding as it is called save-a-ho syndrome. Where there's going to be a girl that's like really, really down on her luck. And she's not doing well. And you're going to target her because she's easy prey. She's more likely in certain scenarios to be willing to whatever it is you want to suggest because she needs a roof over her head. She needs food to eat. Kind of like the Black Dahlia was accused of in the case that we just went over there with that. There's no evidence that she was an actual prostitute, but there was a lot of evidence that she exchanged sexual favors for food and a roof over her head and the necessities of life. So go ahead, Ellie, what do you got to say about that?
I think that because we're still in this phase of, again, not really knowing for sure how these girls were chosen and why they were chosen, there still is this idea that sticks with me with this case in particular, that this person either knew these girls or had some kind of connection to them, whether it was through school or church. So I think it's one of those unique circumstances where I agree with what you're saying that, these young girls weren't, what somebody would have chosen in that regard. But I think it was of circumstance and he had some kind of a relationship or knowledge with these girls and formed some kind of a comfort that they would get in the vehicle with him. That's just my guess.
I agree. And I like I said, when we talked in the teaser episode, I believe it had something to do with the social worker aspect of it. I believe they were targeted because of the fact that he felt like they would be compliant for whatever reason. Good. Jennifer, what do you got to say?
In my opinion, I disagree with you. Men go, well, killers, anybody. And of course, I mean, I understand that you're degreed and all that stuff in forensic psychology and stuff. But from my understanding, people who do stuff like that, killers, rapists, it is a lot about opportunity. And if you look like you can fight, or if you look like you're going to fight back, or if you look like, in this instance, if you look like a little kid who's going to scream and tell mom, or, you know, or you have a good relationship with your parents. Of course, I don't, you know, if I was a child predator, I wouldn't want that. And I want a kid who doesn't have a good relationship with their parents, or isn't watched after by their parents, to be able to be able to take and do what I want. That's my opinion. I believe that it was just he. I think the first one was the I don't remember which one was the first one, but the one who they questioned the uncle. I think he was the uncle was just I'm going to take this opportunity. He was an opportunist. He did it, and then he took off and left.
Right. And I don't disagree with you. I just, there has to be a level of familiarity with these girls if you're going to leave credence to the fact that all their initials started with the same letters, and that their bodies were ultimately dumped in towns that started with the same letters. So the whole reason why they're called the Alphabet Murders is because Carmen Colon, the first one, her initials were CC, and she was dumped. Her body was ultimately dumped in a town that name began with C. Wanda Walkowitz, same thing. Both of her initials were W. Her body was dumped in a town called Wilbur. And last but not least, Michelle Mayenza was kidnapped and sexually abused, and her body was dumped in a town called Macedon. So the only reason why I mention the familiarity is because, by necessity, in order to be able to pick girls whose initials are the same, you have to have some, you have to at least know what their last name are. So you could have just picked them off the street randomly.
Right. Understood.
Right. That was the only reason why I said that. Diane, what do you go ahead and weigh in on that?
Well, I agree with a lot of what Jennifer and Ellie said, and whether or not this killer actually knew these girls, something about what Jennifer said about whether these kids had good relationships with their parents. And I'm just struck by the fact that these were young girls, like 10 and 11 years old, who were out walking on their own in kind of a somewhat of an urban area. And I think that perhaps that's why they were targeted, is that maybe a kid who had, or a young girl who had a great relationship with their parents, wouldn't be sent out to buy groceries and be struggling with that grocery bag on the way back. Like, I read that one of the girls was struggling with his bag. She had to prop it up against a fence. Like, that was just so unfair to send her out to buy these groceries from a deli when she could barely carry the bag. And then the girl sent out to go collect her mother's purse after the fact. I mean, this just, it bothers me. And I just think that that's partly why these girls were chosen, was because just by virtue of the fact that they were so young and out walking the streets by themselves in the late afternoon, like this, running errands for the family. So that's what strikes me about this.
Absolutely agree. And another thing I just wanted to bring up, a couple of the details. If you haven't, you listening at home, if you haven't listened to our teaser episode on this subject, definitely do. A couple of points that we bring up in there that I just want to apprise you of if you're unfamiliar with them. A few things that these three girls also had in common, other than their names being the same and the name of the town that their body was eventually found in having the same initial. All three girls were Catholic. All three girls came from split homes, so the father did not live in the same house with any of them. And all three of them, like Diane just alluded to, were all abducted while they were running some sort of errand for their parents. In Carmen's case, she was the first victim. She was sent to the pharmacy to go pick up her grandparents' prescription. She lived with her grandparents. In the case of Wanda Walkowitz, she was sent to go to the grocery store to buy $8 worth of groceries, which 1973, when she was abducted and ultimately killed, $8 worth of groceries bought you a whole big bag of groceries. So, yeah, she was having a hard time struggling carrying that back. And Michelle Mayenza was on her way walking home from school when she was going to stop by a laundromat that her mother was at a couple of days earlier to see if she could find her mother's purse, which disappeared. So there is some angle to that. Now, in that also, I had posited my belief that I think there's a good chance, a good likelihood that the perpetrator of these crimes worked for the Department of Social Services in some manner, because the girls didn't have any other direct tie. And we don't even know if all three of the girls or the families were on social services, but because of the situations that they lived in, I believe it's a relatively easy assumption to make that they were all receiving at least food stamps or some kind of local government assistance, be that as it may. So some social worker would have had access to their file, would have been able to know things like their name, their address, where they lived, where they went to school, that kind of information. So they could have had a familiarity with the child. And also, if they were a caseworker, the child would know what they look like, know them by name. So if they showed up and asked the kid to get in the kid would be much more likely to get into the car. So that being said, Matt, go ahead. You had something else you wanted to add?
I just really wanted to chime in. What Jennifer, Diane, and you both pointed out, or the three of you pointed out, was this, these girls didn't live, you know, the poster childhood. You know, they were single parent homes, you know, social services. There were all kinds of things involved here in these girls' lives. These weren't role model children. So for some sort of predator, like Jennifer was saying, to kind of seek out a child that was vulnerable, these three girls were them.
Right. Absolutely. April, what about you? What do you think?
I just can't help but get pissed off at the parents.
Me too. How dare you do that to your child?
Well, you know, I mean, without proper guidance and not being their protector, just letting them do what they want to do. I don't know. It starts there, but I can't help but be pissed off at the parents.
I agree. That's just not a. And also you add on top of it, you know, the grandparents were the ones that were raising Carmen, who was the youngest of the three victims. She was 10. The other two girls were 11. The grandparents sent her to the pharmacy to get the prescription for her grandfather. Carmen was also, she had a couple of issues. She was slow. She wasn't full blown disabled, but she was definitely in those needing help classes where she wasn't keeping up with the rest of the class. And so forth. Back then, this was, you know, when I was in school too, I was born in 71. Carmen was abducted and murdered in 71, just a few months after I was born. And the other two girls were abducted and murdered in 73, about the first one, Wanda Walkowitz, about 18 months after Carmen, and then Michelle Mayenza about 6 months after her. So back in those days, you know, we used to call those classes for gifted children. That's what they used to call those classes for the kids that weren't keeping up and weren't keeping pace. But the it really does, just like you said, April, it really bothers me that that these parents would send children that young. Don't get me wrong, my mother sent me on errands, but when I was 13, 14, 15, you know what I mean? 10 and 11 at 10 years old, my mother was not sending me to go to the pharmacy and go buy something on my own. That would never, I mean, never.
And knowing your child has a disability of some kind. I mean, it's just,
yes.
I don't know.
Yes. And in a town where you knew people were being targeted in this, you know, demographic, it's insane.
Yeah, absolutely. Danny, what do you think?
I just can't help but wonder what do we know about any of the suspects' childhoods, because honestly this could mean something as far as their childhood and the way it went. Could the traitor have had a similar childhood and maybe he wants to punish the parents for the way that the kids are living? I just can't help but wonder that.
I mean that's a great point. And if they had some really good suspects, we might be able to know. Now, it had been mentioned and brought up, Diane I believe or Ellie mentioned and brought up about the uncle, about Carmen's uncle. All right. Jennifer, I think it was you. But Carmen's uncle Miguel was originally the prime suspect. Some of the witnesses that saw her get abducted said that they saw a late model at that time, Ford Pinto, and it turned out that Miguel owned a late model Ford Pinto. So for a while, he was a real prime suspect in the case. What happened ultimately is, you know, he was under the cloud of suspicion. For about 20 years later, he ended up taking a gun and killing his wife and killing his brother and then putting the gun in his mouth and committing suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And that was after he had fled and gone to Puerto Rico and all this other kind of stuff.
Yeah, I don't know much about Miguel's, you know, actions and livelihood before this all took place, but afterwards it was definitely very strange, and it definitely didn't end well for him.
Right.
And that's exactly why I really like him for Carmen's murder, and I just think it just happened to coincide with what was going on at the time. I really think it's not necessarily a copycat. I think he did it. Just for her, though. I think the other two were actually someone else.
Gotcha. I agree with Jennifer.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, there's that's definitely, that's definitely a popular point of view for a lot of people, is that they thought that they were committed possibly by different people. Another thing just as an update, the authorities in that county there, it's actually Monroe County, New York, Rochester, the authorities in that county actually believe they're very close to solving this case, because genetic material was recovered from the bodies of Michelle Mayenza and Wanda Walkowitz. And through familial DNA and genealogical DNA testing, they believe very shortly they're going to have hits on who is directly on people that are directly related to whoever it was that committed this crime. So they'll be able to know pretty quickly if it was somebody that was in Carmen's, gene pool or not, because they have they do have DNA samples from all three of the girls. Another big prime suspect at the time of these murders was Kenneth Bianchi, who, if all of you don't know, he went on to move out to California after this team up with his cousin, Bono, and Bianchi and Bono became the Hillside Strangler. As they were working together as a team, but until they were caught, it was always assumed it was only one person. So the two of them teamed up together to become the Hillside Strangler. And he was living in Rochester. Kenneth Bianchi was living in Rochester and working as an ice cream man in that area when this happened. So he was initially a suspect too. However, through DNA, they ruled him out. So they know he was not the source of the genetic material that was left on either of the last two girls. There was no genetic material that was found on Carmen Cologne. However, Carmen is the only one that actually got away from her killer. And there's about 40 eyewitness reports that she was running down the side of that highway there in Rochester, bottomless, completely naked from the waist down, flailing her arms and screaming. And the guy was in the car backing up and chasing her in the Pinto in reverse, eventually grabbing her and dragging her back into the car, and the rest is history. You know, she didn't get away again after that. So just weird kind of scenario, what happened with all of those. Does anybody else have anything else that they want to add? They want to kick in with this?
I just wanted to say, I think it will be amazing when they solve this case. It seems so solvable. The fact that they've been testing semen samples found on at least one of the girls, and they've been able to exclude a couple of these serial rapists or serial murderers who they suspected, just shows that they have enough that they can be testing. So I think they will solve this. And I actually had a weird thought too, which is about this cat fur that seems to be so crucial to some of these crime scenes. And I'm actually wondering, I have no idea, but I don't know if they can test the cat fur to see if this white cat fur that was found at different scenes, and whether it was found on the upholstery of one of the suspects, whether or not they can determine if that all came from the same cat. Like, that was something I was wondering about too. I have no idea.
Right. Yeah, I know now they definitely have the ability to do that. I don't know if they still have any of the cat hair. I know there's a lot of this stuff that's missing. And if you look at the video that we have on the YouTube channel, we actually have photographs of a lot of that evidence. We have the clothes that the girls were wearing when their bodies were recovered, all kinds of stuff that you can't find in the case file anywhere that was released by the FBI and by the New York State Police and by the Monroe County Police Department and stuff like that. So we have some really great video footage that was done by a local Rochester television station about 4 years ago. I think it was 2018 or 2019 when they aired that, but it was really special and there's a lot of great stuff. Matt, go ahead. What do you got?
Quick question. Did they only find cat hair at the last two girls, not the first one? Is that right?
Correct.
Diane, do you think this is one guy that did all three, or what's your gut feel? You think it's two different people?
My gut feeling after looking into this is that it's two different people. The second or the final two seems so similar in so many ways that to me seems very clear that that's the same person. The first one, it just strikes me as not being the same person. And I think that this whole thing with the alphabet, I kind of feel like that's a red herring. I kind of feel that the killer was not taking that into account and that it's a huge coincidence. That's just my feeling. And yeah, I think the cat fur was just on the last two. One of the suspects that they looked into, Dennis Termini, I think is his name. Yeah, they found some white cat fur on his upholstery and he committed suicide, but they checked his DNA and it was not a match to Wanda. But I guess they didn't test it against the other girls. So maybe there's more than one person involved. I kind of doubt it, I think each one was committed by one person, but I actually think that there were two different killers involved here in this case.
The thing with the DNA on that gentleman that you mentioned, by the way, he was known locally there as the garage rapist. He used to kidnap 14 and 15 year old girls, bring them into his garage and rape them. And he got convicted of like 17 counts of that. Right. So he killed himself right before he ended up having to face justice for that. So he was definitely a major suspect in this case, except that these girls were all younger than what he usually, I don't think he targeted anybody under 14. So I think they were a little bit too young for him. But other than that, it fit right in. And he did have a white cat. But the, like you were saying, as far as the DNA, Wanda's DNA, the DNA that was found on Wanda's body had actual active genetic material that they could use to type somebody. Where the DNA that was found on Michelle Maenza wasn't active. So what that means is they could absolutely use it to preclude somebody and prove that they didn't do it, but it's not enough of a genetic match that they could use it to match somebody. So they could definitely exclude somebody using the DNA that was on Michelle's body, but not enough to match. They can match with the DNA that was found on Wanda Wolkowicz's body. So that's the issue, the nuances that they have there. Basically what they've been doing for the last years is they're using the DNA sample that was on Michelle to exclude people. And then they're using the DNA that was on Wanda to try and see if they get a match on somebody. And the two aren't necessarily the same contributor, but they also can't be ruled out. So that's where it stands with that. Just in case anybody, that question popped up in anybody's mind when I said that the DNA between, they have the same blood type, but there's not enough genetic markers in both to guarantee that they came from the same person. They just know that they both had the same blood type.
I was about to pounce all over that. Is there any way they can take the sample from Michelle and reanalyze it somehow? Like the technology has improved to where they can do that, or?
The only thing they could do is replicate it. Now they have that what they call polymerase chain reaction DNA, where they can basically take a very small sample of DNA and they can make carbon copies of it over and over and over again. So if you have a really, really small sample that's too small to test, you can make millions and millions of copies of it and basically give yourself an infinite supply of DNA. from that little thing. That's what they have now. Unfortunately, though, if there are no active markers in that DNA sample, you'll never be able to use that DNA sample to match somebody. But again, you can use it to exclude somebody. So that's the quick little DNA class for today.
I can't believe the price of dog food is getting outrageous. And if I want to save a few bucks, I have to carry a 50-pound bag of kibble up the stairs into my apartment. There has to be a better way.
There is. I'm so glad you said something. You poor thing, we've been using TummyTimePetSupplies.com for over a year now.
Tummy Time Pet Supplies? What's that?
TummyTimePetSupplies.com. They have all the major brands and most smaller brands as well. In fact, we not only get all of our dog and cat supplies there, but they also have everything we need for Brett's chinchilla, Ashley's ferrets, Haley's iguana, and even Jordan's pet tarantula.
Wow, they sell all that?
And more. But what's best about TummyTimePetSupplies.com is that they ship everything through Amazon Fulfillment. That means that everything you order gets delivered right to your door, and if you're an Amazon Prime customer, shipping is almost always free.
That really sounds incredible, but I bet it's super expensive. Mark just got laid off and I can't afford all those special conveniences for a while.
Nonsense. In fact, Tummy Time offers some of the most reasonable prices anywhere. You really have to be a whiz and coupon shopping to beat their everyday prices, and when they run sales, forget about it.
I can't believe it, an incredible selection, great prices, and right to your door service. So what do you think?
I think the next time I buy anything for my pets, I'm going to TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
I think that's a very wise choice.
Me too.
That's right. For all your pet needs, it's TummyTimePetSupplies.com. Remember, TummyTimePetSupplies.com.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Thank you again for joining us for this uncensored episode of the Veritas 7. We want to thank you very much for coming here and tuning in for this more detailed and obviously more verbally graphic episode than our traditional ones. We hope you enjoyed the content. We hope you enjoyed the little nuances and the differences that we added for those of you who are a little bit more hardcore than the traditional fans. So on behalf of all of us, I want to thank you. Before we say goodbye for the night, I do want to ask you to please, if you enjoyed the show, to please like the show, follow it, and rate it. I know it sounds kind of trivial, but as far as our advertisers are concerned and our hosts, it's actually very important. Those metrics are used to determine how engaged we are with our listenership. So, we would really, really appreciate it. It means a lot to us. If you would just take that couple of minutes, if you enjoyed the show, and again, subscribe, follow, and rate the show. That's just as important as the other ones. So for all of us here at the Veritas 7, I hope you enjoyed the uncensored content. Look out for many, many more. There will be one of these episodes that we make for every case. So there's going to be plenty of uncensored content as well as all the rest of the stuff. So we definitely hope you will be around for all of that. Thank you very much. Have a great night. God bless. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.